everybody, welcome back to Tea Talks with Lex. Today is episode 2 of the Quiet on Set documentary. Now, the next episode gets a little bit more in depth about allegations and issues with other people and just kind of things that were going on. There's a lot of talk about Amanda Bynes, there's a lot of talk about Jason. And this is kind of the first episode that we're introduced to Drake Bell. So I just want to give a trigger warning that there is talk of sexual abuse. There is talk of inappropriate behavior with minors. So if that is going to be a trigger with you, please feel free not to listen to this episode. I don't want to trigger anybody. I don't want to set anybody off. So please note that. And I also just want to give everybody a friendly reminder again that we can all agree that not everybody had the same experience with Dan Schneider that others did. It's okay to note that some people had a great experience, some people had a bad experience. And it is okay for us to remember the good parts of things. There may have been a lot of bad, but there was some good too, which everyone that participated in the documentary does acknowledge. So we're going to start off with Brandy. Brandy was one of the kids on one of Dan's sets. I can't remember if it was All That Right Now or the Amanda Bynes show. I took notes, but I didn't write it down. But her parents weren't allowed on set with Brandy, which I thought was interesting, again, to note, because we talked about this in the last episode, how everyone's kind of experience was different with Dan and was also different with Nickelodeon. Like, Amanda's parents were present, but, like, Brandy's parents weren't allowed, which I thought was interesting, and I don't know if that... And it's like, when I first saw that, I was like, okay, well, maybe it was because she was a girl. But then when we were reminded in episode 2 that Amanda's parents were involved in her career, it's weird to me that Amanda's parents were allowed there, but she wasn't. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Take that with a grain of salt. This is where we're introduced to Jason. Jason Handy was one of the people, one of the guys on set who guided all the kids where they needed to be. And at the time, this could be considered, I don't think this was considered weird, but as an adult now with a child, this would have been a red flag to me. So I just want to make sure that I preface that with that. Jason started exchanging numbers and emails with the kids and parents. Now, I'm all for him exchanging numbers with adults and exchanging emails with adults. I feel like if you're a parent and you're going to drop your kid off anywhere, you should be asking these questions. Like, you should be partaking. You should be, like, on top of things. And it's okay for you to email an adult. I don't think it was appropriate for Jason to be emailing children. And... I'm going to be honest with you. Brandy's mom irritates me in this episode. So I'm having a hard time when I talk about Jason because I get infuriated with her mother, just like I get infuriated with Drake's mother in a later episode. Just my personal little spiel there. So he is exchanging emails and exchanging phone numbers. And one day, Brandy gets an email, and she runs into her bedroom, and she, like, won't tell her mother what's wrong and what happened that's making her, like, freak out. And, like, she exits out of the computer and everything else. And it turns out that, trigger warning, this is graphic, so if you don't want to listen to it, bypass it a couple seconds, where the mom sees that it's a picture of Jason masturbating and he sent it to her daughter so she could see that he was thinking of her. She left the business and never came back. And my issue with Brandy's mother is that she didn't report it. I don't care if she would have went to the police or if she would have went to just the executives in Nickelodeon. I feel like she didn't do her job as a parent and report the man. I also think it's interesting that she went on the show, but I'm a little confused what happened to her daughter because she talks about Brandy as if she's dead, but I don't think she's dead. Like, I'm very confused. So she is kind of a character that bothers me in this episode, but luckily we don't have to talk about her anymore. So now we're going to get into the Amanda stuff. So as we said in the last episode, things were starting to take a turn in the relationship with Dan and Amanda. Amanda was starting to get in her teenage years. She didn't really want to do kids television anymore. But Dan, in my view, Dan saw her as a cash cow, so he knew her leaving was an issue for him. But things really start to get really, chaotic for Dan and Amanda and Amanda's life, during the time she turned 16. Because at 16, Amanda's like, I want more adult roles. I don't want to be in a kid's show. Like, that's where she really took a turn in the roles she wanted. So I think it's interesting to note, because I didn't know this prior to this, and I'm going to, at the end of this episode, talk about Jenny Garth, because she was asked about Dan Schneider and Amanda in an interview that happened recently, and we're going to talk about them at the end. But I did not know that Dan had created What I Liked About You. I did not know that was a thing for some reason. I actually didn't even realize that he was on the credits till just recently and I didn't really even know, but we'll get into why. So Dan created What I Like About You and wanted to follow Amanda around, which created trouble on set. So I feel like that's important to know, because why was there such an issue? Like, with Dan, was it behavior that was causing an issue with the other producers, or was it so on? But because I paused it there to write that note, and that's what I was thinking. And then as they were continuing the episode, Dan was constantly fighting with the co-creator. I feel like that's important, because when you're co-creating a show, I feel like you need to be able to work together. And for some reason, even from watching episodes of the show and watching videos that come out now, I don't feel like Dan gives me the vibe that he can co-create with anyone. So that explains why, and he was pushed out of the writer's room, which I feel is important to know, because he had all kinds of access at Nickelodeon to the writer's room and to all these people. And it's interesting how and What I Like About You, he was kicked out of the writer's room. Him and the co-producer were always fighting. Dan remains on set in his role with a producer. He was really trying to usher Amanda into adulthood. And I don't think that worked the way Dan wanted to, because of what happened next. There is a police report about this, so I just want to be clear before I continue that there is a police report, there is documentation of this. After this, will not talk about anything that may be going on with Amanda that's not legally in writing. Like, I just want to be clear about that, because I don't want to be sued. Like, there is a police report for this. I don't have the police report in front of me. It'll be a hot minute to find it, but there is a police report for this. So I feel it's important to know that was like Dan's goal. He was planning on ushering Amanda into adulthood. So during this time, Amanda and her parents weren't getting along at all during this time. Why Amanda and her parents weren't getting along is speculatory at this point. I have a couple ideas as to why they could be fighting. These are, again, just my opinions. Everything else is police reported and documented. I believe it's because Amanda was the cash cow for her parents that there was a lot of tension and a lot of fighting. But that's because of what, you know, and I also feel like the conservatorship now is a big was a big reason for the fighting in that. So that's just my personal opinion. Amanda tries to run away from home and she turns to Dan. I think that's interesting piece as well because Amanda clearly didn't feel safe in the environment that she was in, but felt safe with Dan. And that's why I say when it comes to Amanda and Dan, I don't necessarily feel like it's necessarily all bad when it comes to the two of them because Amanda did feel safe with him at one point. So I don't really know. I mean, I know what the Twitter account alleges happened, but I wasn't there, and I'm never going to say that Twitter account that was her was lying, because that's not the case. I am going to pull up kind of just a few of the things that were brought up by the Twitter account at the end that's kind of alleged, but I just want to, like, set the tone here. The police got involved. There was a police report. What I found to be interesting from the police report, like from the documentary and everything, that her parents were mad at Dan because Amanda was trying everything she could to be emancipated. And I think that's interesting to note because the thing with emancipation is that it would make her legally an adult at 16, legally in charge of her own finances, and legally in charge of everything. So why are you so mad at Dan for helping your daughter and she's trying to get emancipated? Like, why are you mad at her? Like, that's, to me, is what raises another red flag with me with her parents, is that they were so mad that she was getting emancipated when she was the cash cow. So that's just my opinion again. Amanda felt pulled between her parents and Dan, which is, I really feel like, important because nothing is worse than being 16 and feeling stuck in the middle of adults who you love and trust on both sides. Because I'm just thinking from my perspective that Amanda, like, to some extent loves Dan and and loves her parents. And, like, she's stuck in the middle between people that, like, were once friends. I can't imagine being in that situation. It's got to be hard for her. But Dan putting himself in Amanda's life like this causes major issues and causes a split between Dan and her parents. Like, Dan and her parents were working together, crafting her career, making it great, and then Amanda tries to get emancipated, goes to court, it doesn't work, and then there's a split between Dan and her parents. So, you know, and then Dan is no longer on the new show, and Amanda leaves Nickelodeon. So then we start talking about other kids that worked on the show. Like, there was, you know, questions about, like, hey, can you stay late? But, like, nobody's gonna, like, when you're a child, you're not gonna question, like, hey, can I stay late kind of things. Labor laws were clearly not followed. Oh, and it should be mentioned, Dan creates a new All That after Amanda leaves. One of the actors that were on All That talks about Kyle, who talks about uncomfortable sketches, on-air dares that were dramatic for them. Traumatic for them is important to note. Dan was verbally abusive with more success, which, again, is, I think, important to note. Because a lot of times people don't view verbal abuse and emotional abuse as abuse, and it is abuse. I think it's also important to note that, like, when they would be editing shows, Dan would be making comments that were derogatory, you know, And while all this is going on, the stuff with Amanda, the stuff with the new show, the stuff with, like, traumatic experience for kids, Dan is basically touted out as the golden child of Nickelodeon. Like, he's Nickelodeon's cash cow. And they know that. And that's kind of why I feel like this is such problematic, is because Nickelodeon saw their ticket, and at the end of the day, Dan was verbally and emotionally abusive. Like, yes, there was other things that went on, but there were other people on the shows, like Jason and Brian Peck, who we're going to talk about in a minute, you know, that things went on with, and they were just willing to turn a blind eye. Dan wanted faster and faster results. One of the actors was on their way to the hospital, and they were more concerned about getting the show done. Like, this is what I mean, problematic situations. He liked to play games with producers on the All That set. He said, if Dan wants me to go too, he can come and say it to me. And his other producer made him. So that was about Virgil and him leaving. And Virgil leaving changed everything. Jason Handy was arrested, and he was a regular member of the crew. He was the person who walked around set with their parents. In 2023, they searched his home and found child pornography, and he got a misdemeanor. And what was Nickelodeon's response to Jason Handy getting arrested? They made him basically disappear, and the attitude was the show must go on. That's problematic. And then this is where we start talking about Brian Peck, and this is a trigger warning. We don't start talking about Drake yet, but trigger warning. So 4 months after Jason Handy was arrested, Brian Peck, who played Pickle Boy, that kept returning, everyone went to Brian's house. Brian's house was a little off. He had a self-portrait of a serial killer. So many red flags there. Brian Peck was arrested for molestation and made an announcement that it had parents leave about. So Nickelodeon makes an announcement about Brian Peck being arrested and then has parents leave. So that's a red flag. So I felt that this episode was important to talk about just kind of what went on in Nickelodeon and kind of just like the overall complicity of the situation for me, and just like making people disappear. Yeah. And I felt it was important to discuss Amanda and spend some time there. I'm going to just say I wish Amanda all the healing in the world. I hope and pray that she gets all the help she needs. And I pray she gets her life back under control. I'm going to address the Jenny Garth thing. Jenny Garth was asked about Dan Schneider, and she said she doesn't want to talk about him. And she did say that she would love to talk to Amanda, so I really hope that that happens for Amanda. I could feel like she could use some more people in her corner. Yeah, so that is episode 2 of season 1, and I'm going to see you guys for the next episode.